HSS to order at 1:35. Three members are present. We do have a quorum. And we have present Senator Ellis, Senator Passmans, and Senator Dyson. Myself, Betty Davis. There's four of us present, brother. We have one bill coming before us, but you're just here to give us a quorum, or are you going to be here for a while?
I can stay a little while.
You're going to be here a while. So we're going to go right into the business that we have on the schedule today. We have one bill coming up today. It's sponsored by Senator Passmans. And I see we're going to have a presentation on the screen. So I guess everybody has it?
I believe so, Madam Chair.
All right. We'll start with you or your introduction or?
To the committee, Senate Bill 133 seeks to modernize Alaska's healthcare IT infrastructure and save the state's healthcare system about $250 million per year and Medicaid $10 to $12 million per year by developing a secure electronic health information exchange system to improve the safety, cost effectiveness, and quality of health care in Alaska. Alaska health care providers and patients continue to rely on an outdated health care infrastructure, with many providers using only paper-based systems, which contributes to dangerous drug interactions, misdiagnosis, costly delays, and duplicate testing and administrative overhead. This standards-based electronic health network will allow individual Alaskans to have their own personal health record and to authorize their health care providers to exchange electronic medical records in a timely and secure manner. A number of federal and state laws already provide standards protecting a patient's privacy as to that personal medical information, and that is the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, HIPAA, most directly and extensively impacts the health information exchange system. This legislation also provides strict standards to secure and protect the confidentiality of individual identifying health information of the patient. And Madam Chair, I have Mr. Jake Hamburg from my office that if he could come forward and please identify himself and control the presentation.
For the record, my name is Jake Hamburg, staff to Senator Joe Passmans. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to testify on SB 133 today. With your permission, Madam Chair, I'd like to defer first to Mr. Paul Sherry, who has been working with stakeholders for a number of years on this topic, so he can give the committee some background information on the development of electronic health information exchange in Alaska.
That would be fine.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome. Would you state your name for the record, who you're representing?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Paul Sherry. I work for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, and I'm the president of the Alaska eHealth Network. I'm from Fairbanks, and I've been a health care administrator in the state for about 30 years. Thanks for taking a few minutes to look at this briefing about where we're at in this effort. I'm going to try to run through this in about 7 minutes and then open it up for discussion or however you want to move forward. Okay. What's going on today is that Alaska healthcare organizations are making large investments in moving to electronic records. The Alaska Native Medical Center alone plans to spend $20 million to move from paper to electronic, and you just go right down the line. This is a multi-year effort, and we estimate that perhaps only 20 to 30% of providers really use electronic records today, but it's growing. The new news is that the provider community in Alaska is behind supporting a statewide exchange network so we can realize the real benefit of these electronic records, which is to be able to exchange them so that they can be available anytime the patient presents for care. And then my third major point today is that we see the state as a key partner in this overall effort. This is not new to Alaska. It's not new in America. The earliest health information exchange was started back in the mid-1990s. and it's really part of a national effort to build these exchanges around the country. There are now well over 50 active HIEs, we call them, health information exchanges, and they were started under the Bush administration, and they're being enhanced under the Obama administration. And I share a couple of names of different health information exchanges that are in place and developed down in the states. In the big picture, the federal government envisions a loose network of all the various federal health agencies connecting to state health information exchanges. So what we're looking at today is Alaska's a little corner of that map and how we develop an HIE in that larger framework. So the reason we're doing this are several. The main thing is that today Alaskans have great facilities and great programs, but the records cannot easily follow the patient as they move to different providers. And so all of this kind of information that's available in different provider records cannot easily be transferred to other providers when needed. And as a result, what we get is a lot of redundancy in testing and procedures and reordering tests because the new provider doesn't know what the last provider has in their record system. Another huge benefit is around what we call e-prescribing, which is where the physicians and the pharmacies coordinate to make sure that new medications being prescribed aren't conflicting with other medications that the patient may have from another provider that they don't even know has it. The experience has been is that providers are seeing lower costs for the management of their data from these kind of systems. And then finally, we've seen some examples around the country where the state public health offices have been able to expedite their response in public health emergencies from these kinds of systems. A big issue in the last several years has been patient privacy. Some people look at this as being the creation of a centralized patient record data bank. That is not what's envisioned here. In the system we're looking at, all the providers keep their own records. And there is not a centralized patient record. There's the availability of patient data through the exchange. And HIEs make it possible for patients to opt in or out of the networks, basically, and there are high penalties for data breaches. The final big reason for moving ahead with these are savings in expenses. And I'd be glad to share with you, we shared several with Senator Pascaban, but there's a series of reports that show that once you fully deploy an interoperable EMR system, the industry can save a net 5% of total expenses, which is huge money. We project that for Alaska for all providers at $250 million, and just for a GF Medicaid at somewhere north of $10 million. So we call our HIE the Alaska eHealth Network. It took us a while to land on that name. This is a $5 million, 5-year, $35 million effort. And to date, we've secured $12 million of that, mostly federal money, including $500,000 that was appropriated by this body last year. Okay, so we have another $23 million to go. This is a kind of a graphic of the stakeholders that we see being connected to the network. Most of you are aware that Alaskans usually aren't seen by only one provider. They're seen by multiple providers. And so the ability to move records between these different kind of organizations is what we're trying to achieve. Here's just a sample picture of the kind of record that we're talking about. It integrates pictures, laboratory reports, imaging reports, vital signs, immunizations, allergies, and it helps refresh individual patient or provider records with this kind of data. Here's a different structure that's used elsewhere. So the eHealth Network, we incorporated a nonprofit last fall with these partners, And as you can see, we've tried to bring to the table the native health system, the private hospitals, the primary care providers, which are mainly the community health centers, Primera as a payer, the department, the federal agencies, and the private physician community. This is the name of their alliance in Anchorage. And finally, the AARP, who's interested in looking at this from a public sector view. And these are the members of our board today, 11 people from different parts of the state with different kind of stakeholder skills that we bring to the table. So what have we accomplished so far in the last year and a half or so? We've been involved at the national level with getting clarity about the privacy standards that are used and to ensure that there's technological interoperability among these systems. We've taken some of that FCC money and awarded it to GCI, who's going out there and looking at the technical connectivity of the different providers. In other words, you've got to be able to have the broadband to connect into this to be able to participate. And we now have available about $10 million in federal money that pays the lion's share of buying the technology to get into this network. So what's coming up? Once this network design, the technical network is designed, we need to basically start adding providers to it. A key step is that we need to designate the HIE. The federal language calls for the state to designate a nonprofit entity to be the HIE organization for a state. And so that's a kind of a key step that we hope happens in the very near future. Subsequently, we need to go get $20 million or more from the stimulus package. There is $19 billion total available for HIT in the stimulus package, and the majority of that money is used to procure the software we need to create the exchange. We've asked the finance committees, we've asked the legislators for matching funds totaling $1.3 million this year and $1 million next year to be a match for the stimulus. The further you go out, the higher the state match requirement becomes. And so we're anxious to move this work in 2010 and 2011. Once these funds are acquired, we put out an RFP, and there are more than a half a dozen national firms that provide this software that allow the VA system to talk to the Indian Health system, to talk to the Providence system, et cetera, down the line. Another step will be to ensure that this is connected to and aligned with the state's various data centers that you use for health care. And then finally, we have a vision that providers that hook up to this are going to be able to also then connect into various support systems like voice over internet and teleconferencing and have those activities reimbursed through FCC funding in the future. I'm nearing the end. The final next step we have is to ensure that we have a sustainability plan. Our estimates are that the network will cost around $5 million, the majority of which are subcontracts for this software maintenance. And we put on the table here a kind of a draft operating budget that calls for the stakeholders to share the costs based on their use. And we've plugged a number of $1 million for the state of Alaska in there, and that number may be plus or minus depending on how the thing finally shakes out. But basically, you pay to play. With respect to SB 133, I want to thank the senator for introducing the bill, because to me what it does is it's modeled after what some other states have done, which is to demonstrate the state of Alaska's commitment to participation in this and to create the framework for the state's engagement in the process. Let me just finish this up so we can open up. I think you have available to you letters of support from the different stakeholders for moving the legislation forward. I learned Friday that the new health care commission identifies this as one of its four short-term priority areas, and we've got great support from the federal delegation on this as well. So in summary, we're urging the moving forward of SB 133 and creating this departmental oversight and engagement, and to move forward the necessary matching funds. And these are the outcomes you'll get from the process over the long run are more timely and safer health care for the Alaska community, and potentially significant savings to the state directly for health care services that you operate. I would like to add just a quick comment at the end, and I have Rebecca Madison available online, who's our network director, to answer questions that you have. But in our discussions with the department so far, to me, the key question is clarity about the respective role of the department and the role of the eHealth Network in rolling this out and providing real clarity about the differentiation of roles there. And already we've kind of identified a couple of minor revisions, I think, in the legislation that might be made that would provide greater clarity in that area. And then to address further the long-term issues of what the state's recurring contribution will need to be, more work in that area. But as a starter, we're encouraged that you folks are willing to move this forward for consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions at this time? Yes, Senator Dyson?
Yeah. I want to hear from the administration. I know they've been doing some stuff, so
yes,
we're going to have that happen.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate your work.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Sherry, I had a. I'm glad the legislation's before the committee. I recently conducted a constituent meeting and had a physician there, a sole practitioner, and she was completely beside herself with. Fear about what's in the federal stimulus package requirements for medical records, electronic medical records. And she said that she had no doubt that system-wide or nationwide there would be increased efficiencies from using the current technologies and securely sharing information, but that at the sole practitioner level it was a total pain and a total time waster and completely counterintuitive to anything that, you know, people out there were selling. So is what you're proposing here in the state of Alaska going to be a help or a hindrance to sole practitioners? Mm-hmm. It looks like we would be depending on them to pony up money, significant amount of money, individual physicians and clinicians across the state. What can you say to that sole practitioner about this being a good thing or a bad thing for her and her patients?
Great question. The Physicians Alliance put together to work with the Alaska physician provider community to move forward. And yes, there are challenges to any practice to purchase and deploy an electronic health record system. There's a one-time deployment cost of upwards of $25,000 to procure a system for an individual practice, and that's a barrier. This particular future participation we look at as being less than $1,000 a year per practice, $100 a month, to be able to interconnect your records with everyone else. So we think that that's an affordable. But the real barrier is that first step. And there are, I guess, two answers to that concern. One is in the stimulus legislation, there are separate funding flows to actually assist providers to make that initial acquisition. There are grant programs and there are loan programs that provide the upfront money to help people go electronic. And then secondly, in the stimulus bill, there are incentives for higher Medicare payments to providers for making that investment, to recoup that investment over time. I would say that what you've got is kind of a generational difference with the older providers in our state not having used electronic records, and the younger ones that are coming on are all getting trained in electronic records in medical school, and they expect their practices to have that layout. So I think over time we're seeing a change in that kind of view about the essentialness of having this in the offices.
Yes. Madam Chair, if I could get her concerns in writing, would you be willing to look them over and help me come up with a response?
I would most certainly be willing to do that. One of the rules that we don't put up there is that we think that some entity does need to provide hands-on technical assistance to providers to go electronic, and we think that that's an additional or supplemental function that we can do as part of the AE Health Network to provide that service for Alaskan providers and to help them walk through that process of getting over the hump, so to speak.
Okay. I'll try to get her.
You bet.
She's a busy practitioner. I'll try to get her concerns in writing and share those with you. So thank you.
Any other comments, questions? Right.
Madam Chair, yes. I'm happy to do kind of a brief walkthrough through the bill, too, if you or the committee would like us to.
Before you do that, maybe I'll ask the administration to come up and give their comments, and then we'll go walk through the bill, if that's okay with the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. For the record, I'm Bill Stewart, Deputy Commissioner for Medicaid and Healthcare Policy for the Department of Health and Social Services. With me is John Sherwood, and together we'll be commenting on the bill. I'd like to start out with some brief comments. As you're aware, new opportunities have begun to present themselves under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, or stimulus bill, as we all know it, passed by Congress last month, including a grant program for states or states-designated entities for health information exchange, a state-administered loan program for providers to purchase equipment needed for health system exchange, a state-administered financial assistance program for Medicaid providers to purchase health information technology. But like all new federal opportunities, there's a little bitter pill with the sweetness. There's considerable uncertainty about the details of how these programs will work. I have friends in CMS who tell me that it almost changes from day to day as to what assignments they have coming down to them. They think they respond, they come back, and that's not what we meant, so it's still unraveling. However, the Obama administration has made it abundantly clear that accountability for all funds spent through ARRA will remain with the branch of government to which they're given. In this case, the governor down to the commissioner, regardless of the vehicle used to implement. That's very, very clear to us that ultimately the state will be held responsible for how we use those funds, not any assigned entity or anything else. Given the lack of detail and the need for accountability, the department needs adequate flexibility to oversee and understand this effort. It's important that the authority given the department matches its responsibilities. Under the bill, we want to avoid any confusion about who is responsible for each aspect of the work that we undertake. We have concerns with the alignment of the authority, as Mr. Sherry indicated, given to the nonprofit entity and the level of responsibility remaining with the department. We believe that for this to work as intended, there needs to be some renumbering and a relook at where both the responsibility and the accountability are given. As well, clarification of the relationship between the nonprofit entity and the state needs to occur. It can't stand alone as unsupervised, unmanaged in any way by the state. While we're highly supportive of the initiative to move electronic health records forward, health information exchange, similar technologies are the wave of the future, are going to save us a lot of money. The department at this point is neutral on this bill. Senator, through the chair, Senator Dyson.
I'm sorry. She calls on the.
All right, just a minute here. Senator Dyson.
I'm sorry.
That's about all right. Senator Dyson, yeah. You may speak.
So, in the last couple of years, my office in yours has worked together on a huge plan for a very comprehensive medical information online system, you know, that would have aimed at the informed consumer. You know, and we really appreciate the cooperation and stuff. This is really separate from that effort, isn't it?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson. Yes, it is. It is completely separate from that effort.
Yeah. So, all right. And maybe I was distracted there for a minute, but would you go back over the couple of things that you'd like to see changed in this bill?
I think the big thing, through the chair, Senator Dyson, I believe that the big thing that we would like to see changed is we align the authority and the responsibilities more clearly. To us, to our interpretation, to our reading of the bill, they are very, very confusing and seem to give a lot of authority to this nonprofit entity, but a lot of the responsibility remaining with the state office.
If I may continue.
You may continue.
Very respectfully, and don't let me put words in your mouth, but I could read what you just said, that it doesn't feel like the department has enough control over where this thing is going, and it may not do the job as you see it ought to be done. And but at the end of the day, you get to hold the bucket.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, I think that probably accurately reflects what I was trying to say.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Right, thank you. Yeah, you said that's some concern. You're referring to the bill and not the presentation, but just overall that was given. Have the department or division or whoever done any work towards this bill to point out some of the concerns that you might have in this bill? Do you have that with you today?
Senator Davis, we do not have the specific details with us today. We have met with Mr. Sherry and with the senator staff and have discussed some of those, but we do not have a full listing of those with us today.
But you are still in the progress of working out some information that need to be given to the committee?
That is correct, ma'am.
All right, thank you. So the other question that I was going to ask, you do at this time, though, consider the state or the department to be a part of this network?
Madam Chair, yes, we do.
And also, as you were speaking about the stimulus money, you were saying that the direct authority has to come through the department. But aren't there pots of money, pools of money, that can go directly to nonprofits or other agencies other than state or municipal governments?
There are small pots of money that, yes, can go to other areas other than through the department. But ultimately, the responsibility for, as I understand it, for the ARRA money, the responsibility lies with the state government.
All of the money, regardless of how it goes out.
That is the way I understand it, ma'am.
And do you have those guidelines that you could share with us?
I believe that we can find them, yes, ma'am.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Was that the end of your presentation?
That is the end of my presentation, ma'am.
Okay. You're just no comments? Okay.
No, just here to help.
All right. Thank you.
Back up.
Now to the back to the committee. We can go now to, we have some people signed up to speak. Do we want to take that or go to the overview of the bill?
I don't know if we could have Mr. Jake Hamburg give an overview of the bill.
All right.
He come forward. This bill just
testified. Yeah, he did.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, again, my name is Jake Hamburg, staff to Senator Pasquin. To just address those concerns, we're in agreement with the department on a couple of their concerns. I'd like to direct you to page 2, lines 23 to 26. It's the subsection I. We agree that this could be amended to include language that explicitly states whom from the state government will be included on the advisory board and more direct language that requires participation, such as an advisory board will be made up of this commissioner or this member, for example. So that gives them some explicit statute requirements for membership within the advisory board. The other second change is some clarification of the department's responsibilities versus the nonprofits. As it reads now, it is a little unclear that the responsibilities established from subsection 1B through subsection 2F belong to the department of the department or the nonprofit. A change clarifying those responsibilities to show that those belong to the nonprofit may be appropriate. And so, you know, we had a meeting with the department very recently, and so we didn't have time to make those changes, but we agree that those should
be done. And the changes that have to be made, then, would be in the form of a CS to come back to us from the sponsor?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Did I see your hand up over there? No? Okay. You may continue.
Okay. Well, so I'll begin. Section 1 just lays out some intent language. It includes ensuring that the confidentiality of a patient's identifying health information is secure, improving healthcare quality, and reducing healthcare costs are kind of our big concerns in drafting this language. Section 2 is really the meat of the bill. It directs the department to designate a qualified nonprofit to plan and develop the health information exchange system. Part of the reason for designating a nonprofit is, one, we didn't want the department to have to spend a great deal of money trying to reinvent the wheel when a nonprofit may have spent years investing some money from both state, federal government, and some local charitable organizations as well. We wanted to make sure that this just saved the state money. Also, we felt that a nonprofit could be politically independent, widely representative of the major stakeholders, and operate transparently, so we can ensure that Alaskans can trust this system when we're dealing with sensitive information. Again, in Section 2, the nonprofit must be representative of the major stakeholders, including representatives of local and state government interests, healthcare providers, healthcare insurers, and healthcare facilities. And we just spoke earlier about how we can clarify that to more explicitly state which local and state government interest would be included in that advisory board. Also in the bill is a talks about smooth and long-lasting implementation.
Would you tell us where it is so that we don't have
absolutely
to flip for the pages?
That's on page 2, lines 23 through 26, again, talks about the advisory board. Okay. And then it goes on to talk about different functions that would help make this a smooth and long-lasting smooth process and long-lasting for the state of Alaska. And those functions would include installation and training on the use of the system, healthcare providers, payers, patients using electronic health records. Senator Ellis brought up the issue with local smaller businesses that may not be able to afford that upfront capital, and we'd want to make sure that we address certain policies and possible ways to encourage them to move forward in a way that wouldn't be financially prohibitive. All stakeholders need to have the ability to participate in the system, and that the system will always be in a state of evolution. It's going to require periodic evaluation and improvement of the system. Madam Chair, before I continue into privacy and security aspects, do you or the members of the committee have any questions so far?
Not at this time.
Okay. When implementing an electronic health records exchange system on this scale, it's important to protect the confidentiality of a patient's sensitive and identifiable health information. This I'll go into a little bit more specifics. Page 4, lines 7 through 30, they provide additional privacy and security requirements beyond those already existing in state and federal law. So lines 7 through 10, breaking it down a little further, directs the department to establish appropriate security standards to protect the individually identifiable information. Lines 11 through 13 requires controls over the individual confidential information. This language was borrowed from Texas legislation. Lines 14 through 15 requires an electronic audit system to determine access points and where information is being shared. Lines 16 through 17 requires that the system always meet the most stringent applicable federal and state privacy laws. And this specific language was pulled from Vermont legislation. Moving on to page 4, lines 18 through 21. Oh, we're still there. Okay. prohibits the release of information for reasons unrelated to the treatment or billing of the patient. Line 24 requires that the system allow for a patient to opt out of the system. If they're concerned with privacy and confidentiality, they can opt to not be a member of the system. Lines 25 through 26 make consent required to distribute a patient's record. Lines 27 through 28 require that a patient be notified of any violation of the confidentiality. And lines 29 require that a patient be able to view an audit report displaying who has accessed or touched their personal records at any time. Additional privacy records can be found on page 5, lines 5 through 8. It requires that any contract entered into carry out HIE must require that the contractor meet applicable federal and state requirements for protecting health information privacy and security and nationally recognized standards for interoperability of health information technology. Those are the privacy protection standards specifically outlined in this bill. There are other applicable federal laws that govern health information technology, and I'd be happy to go through some of those if you, Madam Chair, or the members of the committee would like me to.
You may continue.
Okay. The biggest act that protects privacy is a federal law known as the Health Insurance Portability and Accounting Act, also known as HIPAA. Some of the privacy protections outlined in this bill is that describe that a patient is able to obtain a copy of their health record at any time. They can request corrections or errors that the patient finds. They can receive an accounting of how their information is being used and transferred around. They can request limits on access to and additional protections for particularly sensitive information. And they can request confidential communications. And they can complain to the facility's privacy officer if there are any problems. And then they can pursue a complaint with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services as well. And there's many other privacy protections, and I'd be happy to provide those to the committee.
I suppose that's the federal requirements that you're referring to, but is there anything in the bill that would also say that the state would have that authority to do the same at
yes.
that level in the bill itself?
Yes, ma'am.
Maybe you went over that. I just didn't recall it.
It's okay. It would be on page 5, line 5. A contract into to carry out the purposes must require that the contractor meet applicable federal and state requirements for protecting health information privacy and security and nationally recognized standards for interoperability of health information technology.
That's it.
And then on page 4, lines 16 and 17, meet the most stringent applicable federal state privacy laws governing the protection of the information contained in the system.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the presentation that I had.
Are there any questions from the committee at this time? No questions at this time. We do have several people signed up to testify. And we will go to the testimony. Fairbanks, there's a Rebecca Madison.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
I really am available most for questions.
Questions.
I would like to say that as a mother and a caregiver, I have always felt that it's very difficult to get information that you need and take it to where it needs to go when you're taking care of very sick patients. And so I believe that this is really going to be beneficial to the people in this state in a way to allow them to exchange the health information they need where they need to take it.
Thank you. So, Rebecca, you then are a part of the Alaska Health Network, eHealth Network?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Is there anyone else there to testify?
Not in Fairbanks.
Is there anyone else at any of the LIOs that's listening to testify? Anybody in the what?
Madam Chair in Anchorage?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Pat Luby. I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP.
Okay.
On behalf of our 97,000 members in Alaska, who are all consumers of health care, AARP is in strong support of Senate Bill 133. We believe that health IT has enormous potential to improve both quality and affordability of health care. Among the benefits will be reduction of medical errors. The Institute of Medicine estimates it will reduce medical errors just in hospitals by 98,000 a year. It will provide access to comprehensive medical records anytime and anywhere, including emergencies when people cannot speak for themselves. It will reduce the need for duplicative tests and procedures commonly performed because records are not available. It will eliminate redundant paperwork burdens and the need for patients to repeat medical history and demographic data over and over. It will engage consumers in managing their own care and facilitate a wide array of technologies that help people stay in their homes and communities and avoid premature and inappropriate institutionalization. We could go on, but I think you see our point. E-health would result in better and less expensive health care. It's good for providers. They can spend their time on patient care instead of struggling with paperwork. It will be much better for those of us who are consumers of health care. Anywhere, anytime. Alaskans deserve this. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for Pat? All right, thank you. Mr. Sherry, could you come back up a minute? I have one question I'd like to ask, and maybe you might be able to answer for me. Isn't there a network of doctors already doing similar to what you're putting together on a statewide basis, in Anchorage at least?
One of the groups listed on our partner group is the Alaska EHR Alliance, which is a group of private physicians in Anchorage who are working collectively to help get electronic health records used more broadly in the physician community.
And they have also agreed to come into the network?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Yes.
Mr. Sherry. Thank you, Madam Chair. What is, if you could just expand on the federal match and any dates that may be applicable for the state's contribution in order to participate, and I believe you indicated the longer a delay, the less the right. Fed costs.
Well, clearly, I mean, the stimulus is trying to move action in 09, and we expect that the Office of the National Coordinator, which is this federal office that handles all of this money, will be releasing soon their scenario for distributing these funds in these different revenue streams. And we want to be positioned to make application for those funds later this spring, I mean, and early this summer. We're talking about these monies becoming available very quickly. So we want to be positioned to make that application. And again, in the earlier years, the match requirement is substantially less. As you go out, it becomes higher and higher. So we'd like to move our target is about $20 million in federal stimulus money from at least one of the grants to states revenue stream, if not potentially a couple of others. $1.3 million in state match will significantly increase our competitiveness for those various funding streams, to know that's available. And we're going after as many different sources of local and other contributions as we can get for this. I am expecting that the tribal health organizations, for example, will be able to step forward shortly and put in their own match for this as well. So what I'm trying to share is that if if a number of the stakeholders or partners put in resources, we can move this thing a whole lot faster.
Any other questions?
If I could make one last comment about the committee substitute that you were discussing earlier.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, obviously this is a rapidly developing front. And based on the discussions we've had with the department, we believe, too, that there are some restructuring arrangements that can be made in this bill that would provide much better clarity about responsibilities and provide clearer statements about how the different stakeholders are represented in the nonprofit. And so we're very ready to work with the department to help bring back to you those kind of revisions that'll make this really workable.
And, thank you very much. Okay. Any other questions or comments? I think we've had a pretty good overview of the bill. There's no one in the audience to testify. There's no one off-site to testify. And at this time, I'm going to close the public testimony. And if are there anything on the bill that anybody on the committee wants to have further work done on? If not, I'm ready to adjourn our meeting. You're already working on the substitute to come to us, so if there's no other things to come before us, I'll join the meeting at